Okay, so our themes today revolve around the one God expressing through all of life and then ending discord. And so, I think I'm singing to the choir here about one God. I mean, I think we kind of all understand that and appreciate that. But it's interesting to think about the one presence, the one expressive God through all of creation and what that means, kind of the web of life idea, which to me is ancient wisdom. And this is coming from the text, from the reading today. We believe in the unity of all life and that the highest good and the innermost God, that should be God, highest God, I think, and innermost God are one God. And that there's one cause behind and within all of life. And Chief Seattle, American Indian chief, puts it this way. Humankind has not woven the web of life. We are but one thread within it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. All things are bound together, all things connected. And so, with this idea of spirit being throughout, expressing throughout life, that includes us. Spirit expressing through all of the physical world, that includes us. And so we become these spiritual beings in form as spirit in form. And it seems like it would be the most challenging thing. I mean, being human is not easy. And yet, my sense of spirit's experience in form as us is grand. That it's the only way for spirit to experience a great capacity for love and to be loved and the whole evolution piece as we face our challenges and rise above and the whole triumph of all of that human experience. We don't enjoy being in the challenges, but the rising above it when we find find that courage and we stand in our strength, then it's like it's all worth it. It all makes sense. And just briefly, what came to mind about this web of life is within our own body, there's this web of life in the energy centers that probably most of you are familiar with, coming from the Ayurvedic yoga philosophy, the chakras. And so the root, the base chakra at the tailbone represents the physical world in the foundation. It's very solid, it's very stable, and that's where we process our sense of belonging and our meeting our physical needs. And that when those needs are met and we feel secure, then we move up into the sacral chakra where the creative juices are flowing because we are not really thinking about expressing creatively until our physical needs are met. And so when we express creatively and we find out who we are a little more, then that moves us up into the third chakra, the solar plexus, where we feel our power and we stand in our truth and say, I am. And that feeling allows us to move into the heart where we're willing to be vulnerable, where we're willing to open our hearts and love and be loved and reach out into the world. And so it's from that experience and that reinforcement that we move up into the throat chakra where we speak our words and we listen with the inner ear. And listening with that inner ear activates the third eye, between the eyebrows, that energy center of intuition and feeling connected to something beyond what we can explain, that we have knowings, we know things without reason. And that opens us to the crown, to the spiritual center of the body, where we truly align with who we are. So this, to me, this whole, if you look at this physical life, every piece of it, the web of life, how everything is connected in the world, it just, it's kind of mind-blowing and beautiful and so perfectly designed that it has to be the great creator, the great spirit, the intelligence of source of life. So the text for this week also talks about the process of awakening, which seems to flow from the acceptance of our union with spirit, that we are moving toward the union together in a collective consciousness. And this collective consciousness, so you can kind of spin off, so you know, they say as it is above, so it is below. So this web of life in the physical world, I think it also exists like a web of consciousness. And I have really been thinking a lot about this web of consciousness as a pool of energy, like, so the collective consciousness, I call it, where, you know, it could be kind of this, the image that comes to my mind is sort of, if you're, you know, remember when you're looking at a weather map of a hurricane, and there's this spiral of energy that's flowing, and it's powerful. And it feels like that, except for me, I mean, and it could be anywhere, and it could be nowhere, but it feels like it's, I don't know, somehow above me. But it could be right, it could be moving, it could be right around me. I mean, and that doesn't matter really where it is. It's invisible. And, I think part of the reason I was thinking about this now is because of what's going on in the world and that we're having these global experiences. And I also remembered reading, and I have an excerpt from this reading of Cahil Gibran that describes the connection that we have when we pray. He says, "For what is prayer but an expansion of yourself into the living ether, which to me is human consciousness, the collective consciousness? Pour your delight forth from the dawning of your heart. When you pray, you rise to meet in the air all those who are praying at that very hour, and whom, except in prayer, you may not ever meet. Therefore, let your visit to that temple invisible, which I call collective consciousness, be for ecstasy and sweet communion. I cannot teach you how to pray in words. God listens not in your words except when God utters them through your lips. And I cannot teach you the prayer of the seas and the forests and the mountains. But you who are born of the mountains and the forests and the seas can find their prayer in your heart. And if you listen in the stillness of the night, you shall hear them saying in silence, 'O God, who art our winged selves, it is our will in us. It is your will in us that manifests. It is your desire in us that desires. It is your urge in us that turns our nights, which are yours, into days, which are yours. We need not ask of you, for you already know our needs before they are born in us.'" So it's that mystical merging that was talked about in the reading, that every person is the center of God, and that we share this consciousness. We share this collective consciousness, this, you might call it like a soup, a soup of consciousness that holds our beliefs and our thoughts, and it might be that consciousness that, like quantum physics talks about, where like thoughts gather, and so more thoughts are gathering together and are attracted together, and then they build an energy, and they build an energy, and then all of a sudden they show up in form. So it's a powerful soup of ideas and beliefs and traditions and culture and history. And I feel like we drink from that soup. I don't think we can really escape it completely. I mean, I think that we can distance ourselves from the piece of the collective consciousness that doesn't resonate with us. It won't be attracted into our field. But we are influenced by it because we are a part of that. And so my question is, if we can drink from it and it's filled with our thoughts and our beliefs, we are also putting into it and contributing to it. And so if we are contributing to it, then we are contributing to the experiences of the collective. And might we be, so when we're doing our spiritual work, then we have the idea that we're not alone in this, that there's this group that's also praying, there's this group that's also meditating, there's this group that is connecting with Source through nature and all the different traditions, that we are all coming together in that moment when we are in spiritual practice. Might what we're adding in those moments be amplifying the prayers, be opening heart in a more powerful way? So it's an interesting thing to ponder. So now I'm going to move into the second concept of ending discord. And this is also very interesting and so timely. Oh my, I couldn't believe the timing of this. So what is discord? For us, it's a perception. We probably would call it something is wrong. We would probably call it something we don't want, because when we're in discord, it doesn't feel good. So this is the Ernest Holmes quote about discord. We believe the ultimate goal of life is to be the complete emancipation from all discord of every nature, and that goal is sure to be attained by all. So our goal is to eliminate the discord. Now, I think that's a noble thing to do, and I think I'm not going to say it's unrealistic. I'm going to say we need to shift our perception of it. So let me go back where I was. So ending the discord, we can get into that place through our spiritual practices. I'm sure most of you, you go into that meditative place, the discord will fall away. You'll feel peaceful. You'll connect with all those divine qualities of wholeness and harmony and light and oneness. And I'm going to encourage you, when you're in that place where you've released any discord, that anything that you're praying about or wanting to manifest for yourself, the good, the prosperity, the clarity, the joy, whatever it is, that once you feel like, okay, you've kind of centered yourself in that idea, you've affirmed it for yourself, you just take a few more minutes and just send it out into the world. Send it into that collective consciousness. So, some of the discord today in the human experience has to do with diversity and not feeling comfortable with diversity. And so that is our work to do. It's so interesting because, you know, we love all our ethnic food. So if we could shift that love for the food to the people that created it, that would help. All right. So ending discord, I'm going to suggest another way to end the discord, and that is through curiosity. And Dennis already kind of spoke to that in the beginning, saying, isn't that interesting? That's a wonderful perception, a wonderful way to come into life about everything. Oh, isn't that interesting? Because it eliminates what the mind is so good at, and the mind is just brilliant at seeing what's wrong, at looking for what's wrong. It's really a survival tool. And so we have to really cut ourselves some slack, because we are designed, we are wired to see what's wrong, because that helped us survive in the jungle. But the judgment that it's right now, most of our discord brings us into judgment about and seeing what's wrong. And there's so much that we could go to. And so I'm suggesting that we use curiosity to broaden our perspective, because what I have found is if you can get a broad enough view, if you can back up from far enough, there's usually a solution there. So when we broaden our perspective, this is also coming from the reading, we put on our Christ consciousness to the degree that we surrender our limited sense of life to the divine realization of wholeness and unity with good spirit God. So again, this is a practice. The curiosity is a practice, giving you a broader view, detaching from whatever, to look for solution, to look for divine order, really. To release the drama. Oh my. There's so much drama today. I mean, it's like, a lot of times it feels like a drama show that I'm watching unfold. It doesn't feel real to me, all the things that are going on in the world. And, you know, we like those drama shows because we find them interesting and they kind of make us feel alive. But in life, getting tuned into the drama can actually drain our energy. So in the long run, it's better to detach from the drama. So I wonder about Spirit's experience of the drama in the discord. And I'm thinking Spirit is celebrating it all, because Spirit is celebrating life in every way. Everything that's showing up, it's Spirit's part of it, right? We say it's all good, it's all God. And so why would Spirit be celebrating discord? Well, for me, discord, it creates discomfort. And discomfort is like that nudge to change something. To change something means opening to evolve, opening to a greater understanding, opening to a greater truth. And so that curiosity helps me relax. When I have a curious mind, I'm not in the drama. I've detached from it. And I can say those words, oh, isn't that interesting? And let myself relax. And it is when we relax that openings happen, that our mind becomes clearer, that channel, that portal from the heart, the mind, opens. When we are in the drama, when we're in the what's wrong mode, our bodies are constricting because it senses a threat. When we're under stress, even if it's not a physical stress, if it's an emotional stress, our bodies constrict because it senses stress. And I can't really speak to this fully because I haven't finished the book yet, but I'm reading a book called My Grandmother's Hands. I'll tell you the full title later. I have it in my notes. And it's all about trauma in the body and the way that we hold trauma. And the premise of the book is it's written for three different groups of people. And he refers to people as bodies because he's focusing on the body. And so there's a focus on white bodies, black bodies, and police officer bodies. And he's looking at how we hold trauma in our body, but a lot of the trauma that we hold is not necessarily ours. There's ancestral trauma that has been passed down generation to generation. And there's secondhand trauma for witnessing things that are horrible. So at the end of this book, the subtitle has to do with racialized trauma and finding ways to mend and heal. So there will be approaches and practices. I haven't gotten that far, but so far it's interesting. Now, some of it's not easy to read, but that's true of all of the work that I think we're supposed to be doing right now in relation to racial issues. That is one of my suggestions later on in the talk to educate ourselves. So getting back to Discord, I wanted to give you an example about Discord that I experienced and resolved recently in my marriage. So my husband, Jim, retired recently, and so that's a big adjustment. It's a big adjustment for both of us. We both actually were used to having a lot of time to ourselves. We're both introverts. And so all of a sudden we're together all the time, most of the time. And you know, all of a sudden we're just not getting along real well. It's like we're irritating each other, we're on each other's nerves, we're feeling uncomfortable and erupting with arguments and things like that, and it was getting really uncomfortable, and I was thinking, oh my, you know. So I went into the drama and feeling stressed. And so my little human viewpoint was, maybe this isn't going to work. Maybe this retirement isn't going to work for us. We're not getting along. And so then I went into meditation and I asked the question, what do I need to know about this situation? And I got such clarity. I'm so grateful. And the clarity I got was to experiment with giving each other space. Now, we certainly could have said, oh, I'm going to take some space for myself today. But we didn't. It was like, I don't know, I think I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I don't know. But anyway, so I came to Jim and I said, what if we experiment and we take the next 3 days and just do our own thing? So we did that. We didn't eat dinner together. We didn't watch TV together. And, we just did our own thing. And at the end of those 3 days, when we came back together and just kind of checked in, how was that? We both agreed it was exactly what we needed. And so we thought, okay, well, we could do that, you know, every week. We could take 3 days and just do our own thing. You know, we thought that might be what we needed. Well, we never really did it. But I think once we figured out what the issue was, I don't know. When you see the resolution or you see the answer, sometimes you don't even need to practice it because you know it's there. It's like So we know if we need to do that again, we will. But so far, you know, there might be an afternoon where one of us goes to have some time alone, but it's really interesting how things have shifted for us. And I think it's the getting a broader view, relaxing, getting clarity, and experimenting. So part of being a spiritual being in a body, I don't know if any of you out there are people pleasers. I used to be, I can be, but I've learned that pleasing myself is really the best approach because we are one. If we're all one, then if we're all doing what is best for us, then it is best for all. So it's you know, getting past that sense of being selfish. I have a quote here for anyone who's a people pleaser, because I think that releasing discord, there's a piece of that in there. There's a lesson in there for people pleasers that aren't willing to take risks, like Jim and I did to you know, experiment. So as a spiritual being in a body, do I have the courage to allow the wisdom to come forth? This is from Elizabeth Gilbert, the book Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. Recognizing that people's reactions don't belong to you is the only sane way to create, and I'll say, or express. If people enjoy what you've created, terrific. If people ignore what you've created, too bad. If people misunderstand what you've created, don't sweat it. And what if people absolutely hate what you've created? What if people attack you and insult your intelligence and question your motives? Just smile sweetly and suggest, as flightly as you can, that they go make their own friggin' art. Then stubbornly continue making yours. All right. So it takes courage to be human and to evolve. So the curiosity can lead to that bigger picture where you can see divine order. And so I want to bring us into current events. Can we find divine order in the pandemic? Could we see the pandemic as an ally? This is the way I have come to see this, the events of the last 6 months, in a very few sentences. So the pandemic comes. It's a global experience. It creates global vulnerability. Think about the when you're vulnerable, your heart opens. Think about all of the energy of vulnerability, and because I don't see vulnerability as a bad thing. Vulnerability is an opening. It's a shifting of awareness. It's actually a strength, because in order to evolve, we have to be vulnerable. So there's all of this energy of vulnerability, tenderness, compassion for each other, all of that heart opening, all of that energy going into that collective consciousness. Okay, that's stage one. And then, recently, we have the letting in of a big truth about racism, about the systemic system of racism. And there's a global response. There's a global response to that video of George Floyd's lynching. And so, global, to me, these global events, these global experiences are huge. And that the Black Lives Matter, there's a global response. That's never happened before that I know of. And so this is, all of this is going into the collective consciousness. And what do we see? We see change. We see change happening quickly. We see police officers, you know, the police officers in certain cities, you know, they're looking at their practices. They're looking at what, how they need to be educated and trained differently. They're looking at demilitarizing the police and going back to what the way that used to be with more of a social work attitude. There was the two Supreme Court cases with the LGBTQ employment protection. And I'm drawing a blank on the other one, I'm sorry, but I know you know them. And so, you know, these things are happening quickly, and it's very encouraging. And so if you run across someone that in relationship to the Black Lives Matter, those three words, and they say all life matters, and certainly on a spiritual level, we would say, yes, all lives matter, absolutely. So why are we focusing on the Black lives? Well, my good friend, Reverend Raymond, who is a Black minister in Baltimore, he explained it to me this way, because this happened to me and I didn't really know how to respond. He said, think of it this way, that so all the houses in relation to the fire department, all the houses matter. Every house matters. But the house on fire, that house matters most when it's on fire. And that is the one that the fire department will be focusing on. So there's an analogy that worked for me in order to explain why Black lives matter. Their lives are on fire, so to speak. In their lives, they have so many more challenges and roadblocks and fear that we white folks have no idea about, unless we're educating ourselves. And so I just wanted to share that with you in case you came across somebody that brought that up. All right, so in closing, I have some challenges for you to find your lightning rod. Do you know the lightning rod? That's the thing that the lightning will strike and it goes down this metal pole and it goes into the ground and it dissipates so that it doesn't catch a house on fire or a barn on fire. That's what we need today. Because I don't know about you, but when this all started, I was feeling energy that I felt didn't belong to me. It was a restlessness. It wasn't comfortable. And it was like, I got to do something. And so listening to my body, I went for a walk or I gardened. Grounding myself, you know, sitting on the ground as a garden, that was very helpful to let that energy move from my body. I'm sure you probably, all of you have things that help you. Something that moves energy, singing, you know, singing, you release, you're releasing a lot of emotion in your voice and it's creating this vibration. There's all kinds of things and I trust that you have them and that you know what they are. But look for that. It's all about self-care, and as spiritual beings in a body, our body is our temple. It's our way of expressing in the world. And so if you're feeling restless and you feel like this isn't mine, or you don't know why you're feeling the way you are, you don't even have to figure it out. Just move it. Just move the energy. Just let it go through you. Have the intention of releasing it. All right, we do a drum circle at the Celebration Center. You know, drumming, boy, you know, that's moving energy. Okay, we're coming to a close here. So, be curious. Going for that big picture, and in that big picture, that broader view, you are connecting with hopefully seeing some divine order. I would encourage you to move your feet, to have your spiritual practice, how do you have that clarity? What's mine to do today? To do something. It doesn't mean you have to go to a protest, but do something. Support someone who is doing the work that you admire. I don't know, you'll figure it out, what's yours to do. It'll come in that clarity. And then my last suggestion is to educate yourself. The experience of racism is not known to most white people, unless you're reading and reading about the experience that people of color are having. It's very interesting how in the white culture we can kind of detach from all of that, disassociate ourselves from it. And so I will encourage you to educate yourself and be an ally. There's a quote from James Baldwin, he's a famous black author, that says, "I imagine one of the reasons people cling to their hate," and I'll replace that with the word fear, "so stubbornly, is because they sense once fear is gone, they will be forced to deal with pain." So the education is not always comfortable, but you're going to feel so good about yourself when you do it, truly. We had a book study, about a year ago with the book Waking Up White and Finding Myself in the Story of Race by Debbie Irving. And it's a really well-written book because it's not only giving you her experience and her life and her fumbling through the racial issues. She also gives you a lot of historical background that is not in history books, no history book of mine anyway, that is very valuable information. So the full title of that other book I was talking about, My Grandmother's Hands, Racial Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Your Hearts and Bodies by Resma Menakem, M-E-N-A-K-E-M. But if you just Google My Grandmother's Hands, you'll get there. So I wanted to close with a quote from Ernest Holmes that Dr. Edward Viljoen, I think that's how he says his name. He's the spiritual leader of Centers for Spiritual Living. He put out a prayer recently in regards to Black Lives Matter, and he ended with this quote. "Let us therefore light the candle of love, human kindness, forgiveness, and understanding in our soul, and let it shine brightly. Let us not peer into the darkness, troubled and concerned, because it is so foreboding and unknown. Rather, let us remain steadfast in the radiance of that spiritual light of truth within ourselves. Let us stand guard so that the words of malice, cross purposes, ignorance, or misunderstanding will not blow out the light. Let us so live each day that the light from our candle of spiritual knowledge will forever be clear and understood, not only by ourselves, but by all with whom we come in contact." Thank you so much. Namaste.
That was really powerful and wonderful and timely, Jen. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your perspective and your